Smith, Judge Johnson, Judge Kirk, the Honorable Tracy M. Smith presiding.
Thank you. Good morning. Please be seated. Morning, Council. Everybody, today is Tuesday, June 10th. We have three cases on our oral calendar today, one case for a non-oral consideration. Our first case this morning is A24-1306, State of Minnesota versus Solomon Hosea Tomas, appellant. Council, each of you has 15 minutes for your principal arguments, and counsel for appellant. Podium goes up and down. When you start your principal argument, please state your name and the party you represent for the record. These arguments are being live streamed, but we only maintain a audio version for our public website. And counsel for appellant, when you're ready, go ahead and take the podium, and then whenever you're set up, we are ready for you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Chang Lau. I am an assistant state public defender, and I represent the appellant, Solomon Thomas. In my brief, I raised one issue, whether the state presented sufficient evidence at Mr. Thomas's suppression hearing to establish that the search of his car was a valid inventory search. The answer is no, because the state did not at the suppression hearing introduce a particularized written policy on inventory searches, and neither of the officers involved in the search of Mr. Thomas's car testified that there was such a policy or that they adhered to it. Although the state argues that the record at the suppression hearing was sufficient to establish that the warrantless search of Mr. Thomas's car was justified under the inventory search exception, its brief primarily focuses on a new exception that it did not raise to the district court, the parties did not address at the suppression hearing, and the district court did not rule on. Specifically, the state asks this court to affirm the district court suppression order based on its newly raised argument that the search was justified under the automobile exception. This court should not do so for two reasons. First, it should hold that under an interest of justice analysis like the one the Supreme Court applied in Gouster, the state has forfeited its automobile exception argument by not raising it to the district court. That is because, failing to preserve the argument, the state has foreclosed Mr. Thomas from attacking the exception in the proceedings below. In fact, by raising an inventory search exception to the district court, the state affirmatively disclaimed any other reason for the search of Mr. Thomas's car, giving Mr. Thomas no reason to address the automobile exception. In this way, the state has worked an unfair surprise on Mr. Thomas by raising the new argument for the first time on appeal. Second, this court should not affirm the district court suppression order under the automobile exception by applying the single factor test that the state asks it to apply and that the Supreme Court has expressly refused to adopt in State versus Torgerson. Instead, it should hold that under the totality of the evidence test, the facts presented at the suppression hearing do not support probable cause to believe that a search of Mr. Thomas's car would lead to discovery of more than one bottle of alcohol that was in plain view. Now, the first thing I want to touch on...
Could you talk to us about why it's collared, right, the case cited by the state? Why doesn't that give or respond to your argument?
Sure. I mean, one of the things I want to talk about with regards to the sort of lengthy list of cases that the state presents in its respondent's brief is what those cases in fact stand for, right? I think the state is being a little, I mean, with all due respect, is being a little fast and loose as to what those cases hold. Now, a lot of those cases rely on the holding in two cases, specifically Shinzing and State versus Ellison. Now, Ellison is inapplicable to this case, and the state argues that it actually supports that single-factor test, automobile exception test, that it wants this court to adopt. That case isn't applicable, though, because it specifically talks about search incident to arrest, not the automobile exception, right?
And of course, search incident arrest might have been a better argument for this.
It wouldn't have been.
Why not?
And the state didn't raise it because at the time of the search, Mr. Thomas was handcuffed and in the back of the squad. Now, Gant is very clear that in order for the search incident to arrest to apply, that exception to apply, the defendant has to be within arm's reach of the automobile and not handcuffed.
I thought there was case law, though, that would suggest it could, because it's officer safety, and the fact that the officer defers in making the search shouldn't be dispositive.
Right, and Arizona versus Gant overturned those cases. It reapplied the Schimel test in 2009. Mm-hmm. And so in a situation where the defendant is not within arm's reach of the automobile, which, again, Mr. Tomas was not, the search incident to arrest exception does not apply now, regardless of whether or not it does apply. The state doesn't raise it here to the court. And certainly if it's not preserved at the district court and it's not presented to this court, then it should be deemed forfeited.
So apart from that, in terms of the automobile exception, I think at the time of the search, the driver, the appellant appeared impaired. There's evidence that the appellant appeared impaired and also that they had in view a bottle of alcohol in the seat next to him. Why wouldn't that be sufficient grounds to search?
Well, I mean, applying the totality of the evidence analysis, there's no reason to believe that given that there was a partially empty bottle of alcohol and some signs of impairment that there would be more bottles, right? I mean, if we look at some of the cases that the state cites to, there are additional reasons to believe that there are additional open bottles in the car, including, Collard, a case that this you just brought up, Judge Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in that case, it's unclear whether they're relying on automobile exception or search incident to arrest. But in addition to that, after the police officer saw one bottle, he asked the driver whether or not there were additional bottles in the car. And the driver said, there are additional empty bottles in the car. And the police officer went back to check to see whether or not there were, in fact, additional open bottles in the car that were not in plain view. Now, Mr. Tomas didn't give any indication as to the fact that he had additional open bottles in the car.
Collard turns on, as I'm looking at it, that there appeared to be an open bottle. It was immediately apparent as possible evidence of a violation of the open bottle law and decided that there was probable cause then to search.
Well, I mean, to the extent that this court wants to read Collard that way, I think Torgerson is clear that it shouldn't, right? Torgerson, again, stands for the proposition that this court should not be applying any sort of bright line single factor rule. It has to apply the totality of the circumstance analysis to each case, quote unquote, anew. There is no bright line automobile exception test that says basically that if there is an open bottle, cops have carte blanche ability to search anywhere an open bottle might be seen. And so what this all sort of goes back to is nobody was able to ask the officers whether or not they believed additional open bottles existed in that car. And again, the fact that they relied on the inventory search exception, which does not allow for pretextual searches, that has to be the only reason why you're searching the car under the inventory search exception, indicates that the officers didn't know or didn't believe that there were additional bottles of alcohol in the car.
Search exception, it can't be motivated entirely by an investigative purpose. Is that right?
It cannot be.
Okay,
no.
But that doesn't mean that you can't also have an investigative.
Well, I think the case law provides us so long as there, one of the reasons is an inventory search.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the case law provides sort of in summary that the reason for the search should be to inventory the car,
mm-hmm.
right? And
so, okay.
And for no other pretextual reasons.
Do you have more to add about, I don't want to stop you on the automobile exception. Did you have more that you wanted to say on that before we turn back to the inventory?
I mean, I can address each one of the cases that the state cites to, but if you really look closely at those cases, either they're supported by Ellenson, which is not an automobile exception case, it's a search incident to arrest case, which is inapplicable in this case, our case, based on my earlier discussion with Judge Kirk, or there are additional facts that might support reason to believe that there are bottles in the car. It is not the single factor bright line rule that the court is asking this court to apply, or excuse me, the state is asking this court to apply.
Judge Smith, I have one question about the automobile exception issue. Mr. Lau, is it necessary for the record to be developed on that issue? Is it necessary to have testimony from the officer in light of the fact that we review de novo and it's an objective test, I think, whether, I mean, can this court apply the Torgerson multi-factor test in the first instance on appeal, even without such testimony, just looking at the facts and circumstances as we know them?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because although it's a de novo review, there's deference to the district court's findings, and the record needs to actually be developed in order for the court to conduct that review. And so if the parties don't have an ability to talk to, say, the officers about the inferences that they drew from the circumstances, which is a consideration when you're deciding probable cause, then this court can't conduct that de novo review, right? I mean, I understand that this court decides, looking at all of the facts from the district court, whether or not they satisfy the exception under a de novo review, but the facts still have to be developed, and the district court still has to make the determination on those facts.
To follow up, what types of factual findings might we expect and rely on that we don't have in this case? Can you give some examples?
The police officer's inferences, for one, right? Any inferences that they drew from the circumstances that they were observing firsthand. We have no idea what they thought about whether or not there were additional bottles. Nobody was able to ask them.
Why does that matter in a test of what's reasonable for the search?
Well, because
if there's a bottle, let's say the record is just all it is, which is open bottle, signs of intoxication.
Sure.
And that's all the state chose to put on.
I mean, they could have testified to what else they saw that may have made them believe that there were additional open bottles in the car. They may have testified, like in a lot of these other cases the state cites to, factors that they considered. I mean, I think in Shinzing there was testimony from the police officer that, you know, he believed that the children or the kids, the 17-year-old kids, were drinking inside the car because they weren't of age to drink anywhere else, right? And so there was a greater likelihood that they were drinking inside the car, and so there was a greater likelihood there was an open bottle in the car. There was another officer who testified, I think that was in, Alesso? Yeah, there was another case that called Alesso where the officers saw that the passengers had open cups in their laps when the officers approached an illegally parked car, and the officers asked to smell the cup. The officer testified that it smelled like alcohol, and that led them to believe that they'd poured alcohol from an open bottle into those cups. Now, in none of those cases did the officers say, I saw one bottle, and that led me to believe that there were more bottles, in none of those cases, right? So again, that single factor test does not apply in the context of the automobile exception. It applies if the officer sees an open bottle and decides to arrest an individual for that open bottle, and the person is within arm's reach of that car under the search incident to arrest exception.
So on the inventory search, we know that the actual policy from case law does not need to be admitted,
nope.
But there can be testimony. Does there need to be, in your view, I think you referenced the word written, is the absence of the word written in the testimony, is that significant here? What's missing from the description that they have a policy for impounding vehicles, the purpose is to safeguard the, here's what I see in there. They say, it was done according to policy. We impound vehicles.
They do not say that.
Oh, all right. I might have.
They say it's common practice based on their knowledge and experience. That's Officer Neothor.
He testifies
that on my knowledge and experience, it is common practice to do a couple of things that they said they did.
Right, okay, my apologies. So they say there was a search. Do you search vehicles before you impound them? We do. There was a search. Was it performed? What's the purpose of it? To safeguard the valuables. When you conduct an inventory, do you have an inventory sheet? Yes, and the inventory sheet was done, is the testimony. So is it the absence of the word? What's missing?
Well, there's,
that there's not description use of the word policy, or we can't infer that they're talking about a policy.
That is not my issue with what happened here. My issue is that there's no information as to what is guiding what they are doing in this situation, right? If in fact it's true that Officer Thor is just doing it based on his knowledge and experience, that is actually affirmative information that they're not following a policy, right? There doesn't need to be any particular word that's said, but there needs to be something that can be drawn from the record to imply that what they are doing is in adherence to something, to a policy that's been put out by the department. And just on this record, there's no indication of that. Again, at best, we have Thor saying, we did one A, B, C thing, I think something about a CSO about when they conduct inventory searches, pursuant to his knowledge and experience as to what is common practice. And that is not the same thing as saying we did this pursuant to a particularized policy that is required under the case law.
Does it matter that the officers performed the search rather than the CSO, that the CSO watched instead of, does that matter?
I don't think it matters because, again, there's no evidence in the record that the CSO being present is part of some sort of particularized policy. Again, they say that this is just what we do, but the fact that the department does that is not indication that there's an express particularized policy that's required under Tour and Rotowalt, right? And so I would ask that for all those reasons, this court reverse the district court suppression order. Thank you.
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And counsel for the respondent.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Nicholas Kimball, Assistant Hennepin County Attorney. I represent the respondent, the state of Minnesota, in this matter. Officers Kekik and Thor discovered the firearm at issue in this case mere moments into a lawful search permitted under two separate and distinct exceptions to the search warrant requirement, the inventory search exception and the automobile exception. This court could analyze this case under either or both of those exceptions and affirm under either or both of those exceptions. Appellant raised the question of whether the state waived the automobile exception as part of their brief and in the argument. And I just would start by pointing out that it's well established that a respondent can raise new arguments in defense of a decision by the district court. It's explicitly permitted by the rules as long as the facts support the argument, the law supports the argument, and the relief that is granted does not exceed the relief sought. That is well established by case law. And
what facts in the record support your argument about the automobile exception?
Well, I think we got into it during appellant's argument, but the facts here are more than simply a single bottle of brandy that was in open sight that is undisputed. We start with the expired tabs on the vehicle that the officers observed. The officers testified that they, Officer Kekik testified that he observed the Mr. Tomas almost hit another vehicle while he was driving. They pulled him over. They saw the open container immediately. Officer Kekik testified that Mr. Tomas smelled of alcohol, had eyes were bloodshot and watery. He administered the horizontal gaze nystagmus test, and all six indicia of intoxication were present.
And just to be clear, I guess what facts support your argument that there was probable cause to search the vehicle further?
I think all of these facts support the idea that there was probable cause to search the vehicle. I think that this idea that the officers were required to believe that they would find additional bottles is not supported by any case law. I think that this is a totality of the circumstances analysis. All of these circumstances contribute to the analysis that this court should make to determine that the automobile exception applies.
What if they had not seen a bottle at all? Would there be probable cause to believe that there's contraband in there, just on appearing the driver appearing intoxicated, et cetera?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so the bottle matters.
The bottle matters.
Okay, and the bottle, is your argument that the bottle alone would be enough because of an open bottle violation, or is it that you is that what you're relying on, or is it relying on driving while intoxicated and some? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Sure. I think under either analysis, the case law supports probable cause finding. I think that in Bigelow, the Minnesota Supreme Court said that some contraband in plain sight gives probable cause to believe that more contraband would be found. And an open bottle containing brandy, having liquid in it, is an open container, is contraband. And I do think the case law supports that. That would be probable cause. That would be sufficient. These additional facts that we have here, indicia of intoxication, erratic or dangerous driving, all of these facts contribute to the totality of the circumstances. This court, in a non-published, non-precedential case, Gomez, Judge Frisch wrote for a unanimous panel that a single open bottle of vodka in plain view was sufficient to affirm a search under the automobile exception. So I think that the case law supports the idea that a single open bottle, open container, does provide probable cause to search the vehicle.
Was I on that panel?
Pardon me?
Was I on that panel with Judge Frisch?
That I cannot answer at this moment. But
I had a case like that, so I'm kind of wondering if I wasn't, but I don't remember for sure. So,
what does the interest of justice, that language, mean? Relative to the state's not bringing a reason, an argument in the district court.
Well, I think the interest of justice would call for this court, and this court's role is to decide cases in accordance with the law, regardless of what any party raises. The Supreme Court has laid out that guidance repeatedly, most recently in Foster, a case from this year, that appellate courts decide cases based on the law, even if a party doesn't raise a particular issue, so long as that the issue is not novel or questionable, this court should decide based on the law. And I think
so. It doesn't limit it, as long as it's satisfied whatever the standard is under Grunig. It doesn't, the elements that need to be satisfied. It doesn't It doesn't further limit. Our review of it. It doesn't sound like that's what I'm trying to understand. Like, what interests of justice could the state say, oh, we couldn't raise it because of X or Y, but it just wasn't raised.
It just wasn't raised in this case, and I will acknowledge fully that, I wish it was raised, and that I believe that the record on the inventory search could have been better developed. That said, I think this court has plenty in the record to analyze either of these exceptions and affirm the district court's order.
Can we turn to there are questions on automobile exception. Can we turn to the inventory exception? How did the state put in sufficient evidence to show that the search was, that there was a policy and a search was conducted in accordance with it?
Well, and to start with, the case law, as I read it, suggests that there's required to be standard procedures in place. I don't know that. I don't read the case law to require a official policy for a police department.
Does your jurisdiction, though, have one?
Pardon me?
Doesn't your jurisdiction, though, have one, a policy?
There is a policy as far as...
You know, when I used to do these cases a long, long time ago, we always introduced the policy when that was our position.
Yes, and as I indicate, as I said earlier, I certainly wish the record had been better developed in this case, but I do think there's plenty in the record and testified to establish standard procedures for inventory searches by this police department, and that the officers were carrying out the search in accordance with those standard procedures up until the point they discovered a firearm very quickly, mere moments into the search. And then those officers, their attention turns immediately to this firearm, securing the firearm, while another officer, as both officers testified to, the community service officer completed the inventory sheet to complete the search. But here we have testimony about when vehicles are impounded according to the standard procedure.
Well, wait a minute. The word standard procedure is not used, right, in the testimony?
So I don't believe is used, but I think you can infer from the language that is used.
Or the word policy.
The word policy is not used.
I mean, they talk about what they do, but they, I mean, does either, does any witness say that they do that because of a policy or in compliance with some prescribed set of norms?
I think that the prescribed set of norms can be inferred from the language that is used by the officers. So you have officer on page 56 of the transcript. They testify that the vehicle's in a roadway, a tow is required. They were towing this vehicle because it was in the roadway. They testified to when they inventory the vehicle. If the vehicle is being impounded.
Okay, let me go back to the tow is required. Required by what?
The specifics of that are not in the transcript, but I think it can be inferred by what is said that the practice, the standard procedure, is that when the vehicle is in the roadway, is blocking the roadway, that a tow is required. And the language that's used is not, in my reading of it, specific to active voice of what they are doing. He's testifying as to the reason that they're doing it, and that is that the practice or the procedure or what they do in these situations is to tow the vehicle.
But listen, I mean, if there is a practice which is unguided by any, rules, like a written policy or something, that's not consistent with the case law, is it? Just, a general practice that officers tend to follow just out of custom or whatever, that doesn't comply, does it?
The case law requires standardized practices.
Standardized. Well, I mean, I guess, I mean, in other words, the statement that a tow is required, it could just be the officer's common sense that we can't leave this car, other than.
Well, and I think if you read the full testimony, and they get into other aspects of what's happening, and I think taken together, all of these different steps that they're taking, you have when is the tow required, what is the purpose of an inventory search, how do they do the inventory, they have the inventory sheet, the officer actually conducting the search or another officer on scene can fill out the inventory sheet. All of these aspects of what they're describing taken together, in my view, lead to an inference that this is the standardized practice for the police department. And so again, you've got testimony about when they impound a vehicle, why the tow is required in this case, when they inventory the vehicle. They search the vehicle first when the vehicle is impounded, and they began the inventory, they began the search after they determined that the car would be towed, and then very quickly they discover the firearm, and as Officer Thor testified, have an immediate reaction to that, and their full focus then goes to securing that firearm. They testify about the purpose of the inventory to safeguard valuables, and again, touching on the point, Judge Smith, that you raised earlier, that the purpose of the inventory search, it must not only be investigatory, is what the case law requires, and both officers testified as to the purpose of this inventory search being to safeguard the valuables and also to safeguard the officers impounding the vehicle. And then there's testimony about documenting the inventory. They have impound sheets. Those can be filled out by the officers doing the search, or as in this case, by a community service officer who is also on scene. And Again, I think either of these exceptions would lead to this court affirming, but this court can find the most applicable exception to the warrant requirement and affirm this order on either of those bases, whether it's the automobile exception or the inventory exception.
Going back to the automobile exception, I guess the I think the law does not require the officer to say to be specific about what the officer suspected or expected to find. Probable cause that of evidence of a crime or contraband, I think, is the. But still, in getting to that for a court to get to that conclusion, it's helpful to envision, you know, what types of things probably were there. And I'm having difficulty thinking of any one particular item that probably was in that car that would be evidence of a crime or contraband.
Well, I think the most straightforward answer to that would be additional open bottles or open containers.
And why is that probable? I mean, you know, I mean, this was a bottle of whiskey or brandy, right? I mean, and it was mostly, I mean, there was a single occupant. I think if there were multiple occupants of the vehicle, that might be one thing. But if there were... There was only the driver. There was the single bottle. It's uncommon in DWI prosecutions for officers to search the vehicle. I mean, if they have evidence of impairment based on observations and a PBT and field sobriety tests, that usually they go directly to an arrest. And you know it's not very common that they say we need to search the vehicle to see if we can find more bottles. But
well, I think you had a lot more going on in this case. It wasn't simply a DWI investigation and arrest. You had these out-of-state extraditable warrants, or one of the warrants being a nationwide extraditable warrant, and another warrant. You had the open bottle. You had the suspicion of DWI. You had the dangerous driving conduct, and so I think there's more going on in this case than a standard typical DWI case. And I, you know, I just would point the court back to the case law cited in the brief on single open containers leading to probable cause.
But of course, the way things rolled out, the officers did not. I mean, they called the CSO. They decided apparently to do an inventory search, and I mean, in other words, they were not interested in other things in the car for purposes of investigation. It appears. I mean, these are kind of two different. It's kind of a maybe the proverbial fork in the road. Either the officers decide we want to investigate further. We want because we have probable cause. We want to find more things, or they decided we don't, but we need to tow the car, so administratively we need to do an inventory search. And the officer's decision to not do an investigative search before towing the car, before doing the inventory search, isn't that relevant as to whether they believe they had probable cause?
Well, I see my time has expired.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I don't think it's relevant. I don't think the officer's subjective belief in that moment is relevant to this court's analysis. This court looks at the testimony and evidence and can apply the rules and the law around the automobile exception and determine whether or not there's sufficient evidence in the record to support the automobile exception. And I think that if the officers had, if this had been raised at the district court, certainly the officers could have talked about that, and perhaps there would have been additional evidence, but the evidence that was presented supports the finding that the automobile exception applies.
Can I ask one question?
Yes, of course.
Do you agree that Gantt eliminates the search incident to arrest exception?
I think that's a correct reading, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel for appellant.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I just want to point out two things. Oh, excuse me, let me move this up here. That the state, two cases that the state brought up, Bigelow and Gomez, Gomez is an unpublished case, first and foremost, so this court is not bound by the decision in Gomez. Second of all, I think Gomez is distinguishable in that probable cause was conceded in that case. Probable cause searched a vehicle. We are not conceding that here. Now, the third, and I think the biggest issue with Gomez, is that, again, although there is reliance on the automobile exception, there is further reliance on Ellison to support that determination on the automobile exception. Again, Ellison is not a case about the automobile exception. Ellison is specifically a case about search incident to arrest. Search incident to arrest does not apply in this case. Again, the state just conceded it here. Now,
could you respond to, I haven't looked at it, but the state cited to Bigelow for the
proposition. That's the second case that I want to talk about.
Okay, thanks.
I do think that Bigelow is distinguishable because that is not a case that says that a single bottle allows for an inference that there are more bottles, right? I mean, Judge Johnson's point earlier about, you know, what in this case shows that there are additional bottles, the fact that there's nothing inherent in the existence of a bottle in the car that means that there are more bottles in the car. What happens in Bigelow is that they actually see somebody they see a bong in the car, and before they see a bong in that car, they see somebody in the car, or multiple individuals in the car, trying to hide something. Like, there's a quick effort to hide something. And they, in addition to that, see little baggies of marijuana scattered across the floor of the car. And so the question in Bigelow was, did the police officers have the probable cause to believe that there was contraband in a bag that was near those little baggies of marijuana? And given the hiding behavior, given there were baggies of marijuana, given the bong in the car, all of that points to this idea that if there's a container, there's probably marijuana in it, right? Now, the state cites to these facts in this case that, granted, might have supported an arrest, might have supported the stop, including expired tabs and warrants, but there's nothing inherent in those facts that show that there are additional bottles of alcohol in the car, right? The officers testified that they smelled a moderate smell of alcohol, right? They see one bottle and they see signs of inebriation coming from my client. Again, those are the factors that the state relies on to argue that there are additional bottles of alcohol. Now, had this been presented to the district court, perhaps the defense attorney could have asked, was that smell of alcohol sufficient to make you believe that there was more than one bottle of alcohol in the car? That question wasn't asked, again, because that issue wasn't raised.
And in order to seize the bottle that they see as that they suspect is an open bottle violation, what did the officers need to do then?
They can seize the bottle.
They'd have to open a car and go in it and grab it, right?
Right, or they can have my client hand it to them, or they can just grab it from the window.
At this point, is in the back seat of the squad. I think
sure.
They may go up there. Right?
My point is, they could have taken that bottle from him at any point. That is a clear indication.
They could go in the car and take that.
Correct.
That would have been fine, but they couldn't lift up. Where was the bottle relative to the terry cloth?
It was on the front seat.
It was on the front passenger seat.
Correct.
Which is where the terry cloth.
Correct.
Was covering the weapon, right?
And
but what they couldn't do then is lift up the terry
cloth.
That's right.
They could not further search that area surrounding it.
Okay, so the automobile exception, in your view, would permit them to go in and take the contraband that they have seen.
Take the contraband in addition to searching that area, assuming the automobile exception applies, which we are arguing it doesn't.
And it doesn't even to get the...
They can get the bottle.
Contraband that they see.
Correct. They can take the bottle. Correct.
And is that not the automobile exception?
I would call that, I mean, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily call that a search. I would say that's a seizure of property. And they certainly have probable cause to do that, given it is a crime to carry an open bottle in the car. I don't think that we need to.
That was in plain view.
That's a plain view.
I understand it's in plain view, but the exception applies to let them go in and grab it. Or you're saying you don't even need the automobile exception
it. That's not how I read the automobile exception, that they need that in order to grab evidence of plain view of a crime. But regardless, I don't think that allows them, either exception allows them to search further in the car outside of just seizing that bottle. I wanted to get into the 2904 question, but I am running out of time, so I will just ask this court to overturn the district court's suppression order. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. Case is submitted. and we'll have a decision out in the statutory timeframe.